Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On this week's episode, I'm at Outpost East in Halifax, Nova Scotia, with Reese Waters and Jonathan Burns, the co-founders of Podstarter. Reese Waters was a highly respected and BAFTA award-winning producer, director, and editor for the BBC in the United Kingdom, working with huge brands like Aston Martin, when he moved to the Maritimes 3 years ago with his wife and three children, on a whim, with a thirst for adventure. With no prior connection to Nova Scotia, he began his new life finding it to be the best place to bring up a family and to start a new business. It is also where he met Jonathan Burns. Born and raised in Nova Scotia, John did what many East Coasters did back then after university and left, and went as far as an 81 Volkswagen could go. To Calgary, after repairs in Quebec and Winnipeg, obviously. Out west, he worked in advertising, business development, sales and marketing, helping companies develop from prototype to profit. And in the last 5 years, he's travelled across the globe, working with clients like Marvel, Warner Brothers, the NBA, launching marketing campaigns to reach audiences in unique ways. As we're about to hear, it was a walk along the Halifax waterfront one morning that led John and Reese to start their own business together, Podstarter, which uses podcasting content to break through the marketing clutter to connect with people. John and Reese knew that I was a comedian, journalist, television presenter, magazine owner, etc., but were adamant I needed to add podcaster to that list. And during lockdown, it finally happened, and we created this podcast, and your favourite one, dear listener, Mullinger Meets Canadians. But despite daily Zoom meetings and nightly phone chats, I'd never actually met Reese and John in person, until now. So here we are, in their recording studio above my favourite comic book store, Strange Adventures in Halifax, to discuss their lives, careers, and what makes a truly great podcast. And trust me, they know of what they speak. Reese is actually the co-host of Canada's most listened to podcast, Canadian Politics is Boring, which recently hit the number 3 spot of the Apple Podcast charts, just below Joe Rogan. So, here we go. For the first time ever, here we are in the same room together.
So weird.
It is weird. It sounds like the start to a bad joke. An Englishman, a Welshman, and a Canadian walk into a recording studio in downtown Halifax.
I'm sure the punchline involves me and some kind of farm animal.
It does. I'm glad we started with sheep shagging. That's amazing. Remarkable. As always comes up when an Englishman and a Welshman get scared. John Reese, it's great to finally be in a room with you. We've been now working together for 6 months.
Yeah.
Talking often daily, but it feels quite weird to see you both in 3D. I thought you both just lived inside my laptop.
Yeah. We actually put on pants.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. It's very nice to see you in pants for a change.
Yeah.
I guess the question I'd love to start with is, how did the two of you meet? Reese obviously moved here from the UK, and we'll get into why later, but how did the two of you, and you obviously are born and bred Maritimer, but you've traveled all over. How did you two become a couple?
Yeah, I've got the traditional, you know, East Coast story where you're born and raised, go off to school, disappear for a while, and try not to come back, and inevitably you come back.
Right.
And Reese and I connected about a year and a half ago now. Reese had just quit a job and was producing tons and tons of content and just stuff that grabbed my eye. And so we reached out, connected on LinkedIn, of course, and then went for a long walk on the waterfront. And at the end of that conversation, we sort of had some ideas of a company, which then became Podstarter a month later almost.
Yeah. So we started talking about podcasts, and then I was like, oh, I'm giving a talk at Volta, the the incubation center in downtown Halifax about podcasts. And Jonathan was like, well, we should launch a company. So we literally got like 2 weeks to come up with a brand, come up with a name, design a logo, all these different things that we needed to do. And we even built a website, I think, in a couple of weeks and just cobbled the company together. And we were like, well, we know we want to be in the podcasting space.
Yeah.
We just need to, you know, mold and work out what the opportunities are and a business model around it. So we just jumped straight in. Something just clicked where we both could see there was an opportunity, and we just were like, well, let's chase it and we'll work out what it is when we get there.
Right. So. And I mean, you both have very different backgrounds, but of course the two different backgrounds of course blend perfectly into this, what this business is. How would you describe the business to someone, either A, that you're pitching to, or who literally knows nothing about podcasts?
It's funny, we were talking about this morning, what the company is and what it was a year and a half ago and what it was 6 months ago. And
right.
it is quickly changing, like the industry's changing. Originally, the simple idea was, we're going to help people podcast well. A lot of people are doing it. It's an accessible technology, easy and straightforward to do it, but there's a lot of bad stuff out there. So it was almost a learning or a tutorial or a workshop system. And what happened was clients started coming to us saying, you know what, I'm not really an editor. I don't want to do that. I don't want to worry about the distribution stack. I don't want to worry about the storytelling or being the producer. Because there is a lot that's involved in doing a podcast well. And so inevitably we shifted away from the, we'll teach you how to fish, to we'll take care of whatever you need us to do.
Yeah. And also we realized that the real key to getting people excited about podcasting is to pitch them creative ideas that don't necessarily sound like every other podcaster you hear. So we're more actively trying to get people to engage with, hey, why don't we record on a lobster boat out in the ocean rather than, you know, be in a room like we are now. So and also, how do you weave the story together? Do you have scripts? Do you have actors? Is it more of a documentary feel? So we're trying to offer people kind of creative solutions. We'll give a range of ideas. Some are more traditional, some are more out there. But we really try and push that podcasting can be a really creative endeavor. And something can really make them stand out as well.
Right. So I mean, I'm sure there's no such thing as a typical client, but who would be who were the first few clients? And
well, I'm more excited to pick up on the thread that Reese was just talking about there, which was our approach shifted so that we're actually interested more in the audience first.
Right.
Who would listen to something? And then if you can find that sort of that open space and move into there to figure out the stories that you're telling to that particular audience. And then we've been going back even further saying, who aligns with that storytelling? Who is there a brand? Is there a customer? Is there somebody that's going to pay the bills to put it together? So it became the audience, the storytelling, and then the monetization piece. That's the latest structure for us from a podcasting standpoint. So there's no typical client for that. Any corporation that has a story that they want to be able to tell, we're starting with that storytelling structure first. The other ones, though, were large organizations that were saying, typically we have a message to share, we don't know how to get it out there. So we talked about marketing. Is it killing the white paper? Is it like a blog post? Is it a vlog? We're using podcasts to be somebody's content calendar, to be able to start a conversation in a natural, casual conversation, and then roll that up and package it into bite-sized pieces of content for social, digital distribution, and so forth.
So what makes a great podcast then?
Well, it's funny because we talk about...
We disagree on so many things.
Right.
Right. Here's the first fight. Yeah. It depends on what you define as successful.
Of course. And of course, it's always subjective. But I guess if we were looking at it, I guess success financially would be obviously one avenue. But but then you've got a concept like Joe Rogan where people love what he does, but of course also makes millions from it. So I guess would that be the definition of...
Well, so if it's the money piece, Joe's doing a really good job.
Right.
But he also has a really good podcast that people really want to subscribe and listen to. So he's built that audience.
Right.
So that audience metric is one of the key principles. For our business clients, it's usually not about mass audience. It's about specific audience. So if it's a company that's trying to change their perception in the market or set themselves up as a thought leader in the space, if we can target that to 100 people that go, yeah, you guys are like Deloitte, for example. You guys are the best at crisis management. And all of a sudden shift that structure around, as long as it does two things. One is hit that KPI, and two is engage an audience so that they you know, from beginning to end, are engaged in that conversation.
Right. For me, it's, does someone listen to that podcast? Do they actually respond emotionally? Whether you've made them kind of excited, sad, maybe made them laugh. You know, for me, even if a show doesn't do well, but it really builds an audience around the fact that you're passionate and you're connecting with them, yeah. That is that's a really big indication of success. You've got to have a reason to be there. You've got to be passionate about what you're doing. You've got to have a purpose for actually talking and expecting people to listen and give up a chunk of their lives to tune in. So I think for me, if you can get that right, the other success will follow, depending on multiple factors. But if you don't get that right and you build something loosely around, maybe people would like this, and I don't really into this, but it's popular, so let's talk about it. I feel like those are always doomed to failure. So.
Yeah. And I guess that's the thing is that if an audience feels like either A, they're being essentially patronized because yeah. they're being, you know, given something that they are being told, we think this is what you want, as opposed to them discovering something organically. I mean, of course, one of the fascinating things is concurrently, while doing this business, you also launched your own podcast, Canadian Politics is Boring, which of course has gone on to be a huge success. And again, we're still discussing what is the measure of success, but the measure of success is tons of people listen to it. It hit number 3 in the charts after, you know, Rogan. What an incredible achievement to get there. Was that kind of like a statement of intent where you're like, look, we did this, so we're not just saying you can do this. We're saying, look, we did it and we can do it for you too.
Yeah, and I think that there's a number of factors that show grew. And that, you know, that is it is repeatable. It's not guaranteed. You know, it's like if you can manufacture a hit, then, you know, you can make a lot of money, but it's not always a foregone conclusion. So with Canadian Politics is Boring, I kind of saw that there was no content that I wanted to learn about Canadian politics as a new Canadian.
Yeah.
But there were no shows that were packaging that information up in a way that I like to consume it. If I laugh, I remember it and I enjoy it. Whereas there's a lot of content out there, but it wasn't what I needed. So it made sense to create that.
Yeah.
And then the second factor is that my Jesse, my co-host, we've always got on naturally from when we first met. So getting that chemistry right, so that you could have fun, you can play off each other. That's another component. But then also, I think just how you brand it, the name in itself. We wanted to, if we were launching a comedy show, a political comedy show, everyone's first reaction is like, especially a Canadian specific political comedy show, everyone's first reaction is, that's just boring. I'm not going to tune in. So we needed a name that would challenge that first kind of thought that will pop in their heads head on and own it, essentially. Right.
And also, when you see the words Canadian politics is boring in the listing, it's funny and it's also intriguing.
Exactly. So it was all those different factors. I think we were lucky that they all came together in the right way at the right time and just made us very discoverable and shareable. And it was bizarre because we began the project very it wasn't like we were passionate about talking about what we were doing. We were passionate about making comedy, but we were of the mindset that everyone's setting up new podcasts during COVID.
Yeah.
Let's just do this for us. Let's just have fun.
Right.
And with no expectations of where it would go. We didn't have set ourselves some goals of going, let's get in the top 10 within 12 months. And I think that because we were relaxed about it and because we didn't take it too seriously, that actually worked in our favor because we were just having fun and not trying too hard. And that work too in a weird way, which I know is a strange thing to say. But it's strange advice.
Yeah, but it is strange given, you know, that you're both in the business of creating podcasts, and then you do one for fun, and it kind of, for whatever reason, became a huge success. And as you say, I think if someone is trying hard to tick a box, then listeners are going to know that, and they don't want to feel like that they're being pigeonholed in something.
It's funny because we do use it. We leverage it from a marketing standpoint to be able to say, yeah, Podstarter is able to do something really good. Look at this as an example.
Yeah, which is amazing because so many creative businesses that are selling a creative product actually don't have, for example, companies that call themselves marketing agencies or social media agencies and they've got 50 Twitter followers. Like you can't even do it for yourself. whereas you guys have got this thing where you can go, we did it.
But it's funny because Reese mentioned just the other day, one of the feedbacks that he got from a comment, made him remember why he did it. So a comment was left saying things like, really needed a laugh, laughed until I pissed myself. Yeah. Thanks very much. And that sort of strikes the reason why you were doing it wasn't as a marketing exercise, wasn't to say we can do this, improve it and all that kind of stuff. You did it to sort of scratch that comedic itch to get the response from, an audience.
Yeah. And like the Stan Lee always used to say that his friends were becoming doctors and lawyers and politicians and doing important things. And he was, making comics, and that he always felt really like, am I doing the right thing? Am I actually having a positive impact on society? But he realized the amount of joy and happiness he brought to people with what he created over the years, that he was always trying to remind himself that it was worth every single second. The ability to make people laugh and have fun, as a comedian, that it's like a buzz. If you know that you can create something or do something that then makes people smile, a stranger in a car hundreds of miles away smile,
yeah,
that's really addictive. It's like heroin.
Yeah.
I've had a taste.
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah, you've had a taste. It's very Moorish. No, it's true. And for you, obviously, I'd love to go back to like how you came to be here, because you, like me, must get asked that question all the time. Why the hell did you move to the Maritimes? And I, of course, have at least have the excuse of some familial connection, whereas you decided to leave Wales, and you had a successful life and career, and obviously your family's in Wales, and you picked Halifax, Nova Scotia. Tell me why.
Yeah, I mean, we have no family until I visited on my own as like a research trip in 2017 in April, because I wanted to come when the weather was bad, right. just to see it at its worst, but it wasn't that bad. We had no connections, and it was the first time I'd ever been here. And me and my wife had got married in Banff, before. So we'd seen a little bit of Western Canada. Mm. And there was just, we knew we wanted to come to Canada and we needed to find somewhere. And I think the reason we first started to look into Nova Scotia was it just looked a bit different. It looked a bit interesting. And I think Toronto and Vancouver, we may as well have moved to London, because, living in a big city is a lifestyle choice. But we almost wanted a slower pace. We wanted to re-gear our lives to be around spending lots of quality time with the kids. And we felt like we could achieve a life here where in the UK, we were working really hard for less, and we wanted to work less for more. And it felt like when we just looked at, when we asked questions, when we, asked other people what the experiences they had, we looked at house prices, we looked at, all that information, it seemed like we could achieve this lifestyle here based on pure data. Not that I'm like an analytical expert, it's just Google, but then we came here and we just fell in love with the place. Everyone, it was so easy to come to a new country where you know nobody, and everyone will talk to you and ask you questions and welcome you, and that made it so easy just to come here. That week on my own, I came back and I said to my wife, we need to go out with the boys, we need to just come and you need to come and see it as well. So in the June, then we all came out. We rented a cabin down on Fox Point Lake near Hubbard's. And it was kind of a mixture of a holiday with the kids, but also then doing research, meeting people, going to a bank to set up a bank account, and, just kind of preemptively visiting schools and neighborhoods and things. And we came back after that week and we were just completely sold on everything here. So yeah, and then everyone thought, I think our family didn't believe us, because we lived within 10 minutes of where we grew up our whole lives. We never, 33 years of my life, I lived 20 minutes from where I'd grown up as a child. My business was there. Nobody really believed us when we said we were going to do it. So they were like, yeah, I'm sure you are. Go and do your research. You'll come back.
Yeah.
and then when we said we'd got residency and we were going to move, everyone was like, oh, okay. And they didn't quite get it. They were very supportive. I think they didn't quite understand. But then I remember my parents were the first to visit when we first came here. And within 24 hours, they were like, I understand, I get it. And they, even though they miss us and they miss the grandkids, they're like, don't come back. They're having a great life.
Yeah, and that's the thing I hear from my parents all the time as well, that no matter how much they might miss them, they would not want the kids to have to grow up in the UK compared to what this place offers. What were the things that people, because I found that often it's people within the Maritimes saying, oh, be careful, there's no jobs here, blah, 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 blah. But yet you and I have both found it a unique place in terms of, and a wealth of opportunity.
Yeah.
And if you're willing to kind of, you know, work hard or have a great idea, in actual fact, the playing field in some ways is more level here than anywhere else.
I agree. I think, you know, it's like there's like the unspoken class system in the UK that, you know, if you haven't been to the right schools, you're not part of those networks. Certain, there are limits to what you can do unless you're exceptional or you kind of you get really lucky. So I think that here there's kind of a blue collar attitude. And I think that if you get affluent here, you're more likely to buy a $70,000 truck than you are a sports car.
Right.
Because people don't want to necessarily, they want to be true to their roots and, yeah. and to be down to earth. So I kind of feel that when I came here, for me, I could see that lots of people were saying there's no jobs, there's you know, it's very hard to build a career here, I wouldn't waste your time, I'd go somewhere else. But I didn't see that at all. I think that people convince themselves, and if you've grown up here and lived here this whole time and only applied for certain jobs in a certain sector here, maybe that is your experience. But there's kind of a buzz in the air at the moment, especially in Halifax. I bump into people who've moved, like I have with my family, from all around the world. Like my son in his class, there's children in his class from everywhere you can imagine. He's started to learn Korean from one of his friends in his class and everything.
Wow, that's
and,
amazing.
And you find that the people are being drawn here. So even if that was the case, you've got lots of people moving here with different ideas, different business opportunities. It maybe that's the perception, but it has moved on, I think, in the reality. So
yeah. It's I've got some history in yeah. Halifax. And if you talk about what Halifax looked like, or Nova Scotia, or the Maritimes in the 90s, that those stories were true. There were no jobs. There's not a whole lot of opportunity. In the last 5-10 years, the market has been hot and perceptions have shifted now on two things. One, people are saying, I can try things and fail. There used to be a real strong fear of failure. And I don't know if that's small town mentality or having sort of feeling exposed, but now people are willing to try stuff and get creative in that space.
Take risks, right?
Right. Yeah. And so you've got, and the tech space has really helped as well, where people are launching new concepts, new ideas, new innovation, getting started, seeing how that works, and then growing from there. The other thing is that I think we're at a moment, right, where people are going, I can work wherever I want. It gives me the flexibility to be able to pick and choose my space, my place. And when you look at Atlantic Canada from the cost of living, what you can get, I talk about for $1 million, you get the house and you get the cottage and the boat and the motorcycle. You want a dog and have a family.
Yeah.
Right? You got more flexibility, more options from a financial standpoint. So there's that, you know, disposable income, disposable time kind of feeling to it. And that's a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
That's one thing I would say the biggest difference in my life now is disposable time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I get home from work, we go for a bike ride with the kids, come back, we just chill out. You know, the weekend, Sundays feel like Sundays, is rather than preparing for the week ahead, we just relax and barbecue and just go paddleboarding or whatever the kids want to do. And I feel now like my life has got so much more to it in terms of outside of work, whereas before my life felt very much like work was the main thing and everything else had to revolve around that. So yeah, I think it's really appealing to people, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's secretly sponsored by Nova Scotia Tourism. If you go onto his Instagram feed, the
if they would like to give me some money.
So sign up, sponsor. And if you're reading the Nova Scotia Tourism website along the bottom, it means cha-ching, that just worked. But for you, John, I mean, you were born here, but then you moved away. Tell me a bit about that and what took you there and what brought you back.
Yeah, I went, like I said, that fail notion. I came out of university, Acadia, early 90s. There was not a whole lot of opportunity. So got in a car and drove as far as the car would go. And it broke down in Quebec, was there for a good 4 weeks, made it to Winnipeg. It broke down in Winnipeg, was there for a day, and then got stuck in Calgary and was there for about 12 years. And Calgary, same thing, was a hot market. Everyone was from away. Everyone was thinking tons of potential possibility. And sort of carved got skills in the tech space and communication space. And then eventually we'd moved to Edmonton, and one of my employers said, would you go back to Halifax? We need you back there. And we had just had our first child. And my wife goes, yeah, we'll go. And I was thinking, that'd be crazy. we moved back and don't regret a moment of it. And my one of my careers while I was here, I found I was on a plane every week flying everywhere. And I realized that there is no one right city for everybody. I was working in New York, working in London, working in Toronto, then into California, and realized that Halifax is a great stepping stone for tons of spaces and places. So yeah, it's worked out really well.
Nice. And do you see, with everything that's happened over the last few months, do you think that that kind of influx of people coming here, is that going to grow? Are more people going to realize that the opportunities that we have here, but also the fact that you can have it all here?
COVID's been weird, right? And you don't, COVID has sort of highlighted some of the local strengths. We've created a nice Atlantic bubble and have sort of gotten our hands around the COVID situation to a degree, as much as you can. But I think it's changed the mindset of a lot of people to say what's important. And COVID has really had, it's a reframing for a lot of people to say, is it family, is it friends? What do you miss? What do you need in life? And a lot of the checkboxes sort of check off for Atlantic Canada to say, you've got what you need.
Yeah. Right? What advice would you give to someone who is in the UK right now, or in Toronto, or in the States, and desperately wanting a change, and they're intrigued by the Maritimes? What advice would you give to them insofar as how to approach coming here and starting something?
Well, I actually spoke to two people last week about it. Because people do reach out to me all the time, yeah, and say, I've had, I mean, you, yeah, you probably had a similar experience. Like,
yeah, when people get nice and they're like, is it true? What happened to you? Did that really happen? Is it really that good? And you're like, yes.
Yeah. And I think that
sponsored by Immigration Canada.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I find that what I often say to people is, in the UK, if you're into, like, shopping is a big deal in the UK.
Yeah.
And you go to any small regional city and there are just, you can be shopping all day and have that experience. If you're into that, this is not the place to live. If you like a lifestyle where you kind of, the city is nearby, but then you've also got hikes, if you're into the outdoors and outdoor living and camping, and then this is like the perfect place to live, because you can have that career in the city, but then also everything is on you. You drive half an hour out of Halifax, you're in the forest, you're in the middle of nowhere, or you're on the ocean, and the beaches are, vast, and there's very few people there. So if you want that experience, I think that would be unnerving for some people. If you like that kind of retail experience and you want that kind of, if you like convenience and all those things, whereas if you're excited by the idea of, real seasons and a ton of snow, yeah, and everything, and then shoveling, which to me was really exciting. Like, we live out in the forest, and a bear tore. I built this out of old crates. I built this kind of garbage box, yeah, to stop animals getting in. This bear came and just tore the side off it, and I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
I was like, yes. Yeah. There's other people like, oh, this bear, we've got a bear, yeah, problem. I was like, it's not a problem.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
That's why I moved to Canada. Yeah. So I always say to people, if you're kind of eager for that kind of lifestyle and you want to embrace that, it's the perfect place for you.
Yeah.
If you do want convenience, you want all those other things, then it might not be what you're looking for necessarily.
Do you miss anything about the UK other than people?
I guess one of the weird things, this is going to sound really egotistical, but I found, like, when I came to Canada, nobody knew who I was or any of my work or anything that I'd done. But in the UK, it was an easy conversation to talk about some of the shows I'd worked on.
Yeah.
And even if people hadn't watched the show, they'd maybe heard of it or knew Rod, the star of it.
Right.
So that was a very easy conversation to open doors from a business point of view.
Yeah.
And would qualify, and also, people would instantly kind of warm up,
yeah,
and be,
because everyone knows and loves Rod Gilbert, and it's true. Basically, coming here, in many ways, you are starting from scratch.
Exactly.
Because none of your credits mean anything here. And I have the exact same thing. You come here and go, well, I've been on this and done this, and people are like, okay.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. who's your wife's father?
Exactly.
That's what anyone wants
exactly
to know. And that's an interesting one. And that is an important point, that then it was the first thing, of course, that we bonded over, was the fact that, I mean, I had worked with Rod Gilbert doing stand-up, and wonderful, wonderful comedian. And of course, you were a producer on his TV show, which I used to watch and love. And so I couldn't believe that when we first spoke, that someone, again, I couldn't, I'm still the person that gets surprised when people move here, even though I'm the one telling people to do it. So again, I complain about people saying it to me, but sure enough, as soon as you said, yeah, well, I realized who you were, I was like, why the hell did you come here? Right? I don't practice what I preach always.
But for me as well, I thought it was a really healthy experience to be like in my mid-30s and then suddenly have to prove myself all over again.
I agree, yeah.
It was invigorating. Oh,
it's a great lesson, right?
Yeah.
And for everybody, it doesn't need to change your location. What you did 5 years ago, it's probably kind of irrelevant.
Exactly.
Right? Keep building, keep reinventing, right?
Totally. To come to a new place and basically have to start the grind from scratch was something which I definitely found. Well, and again, I maintain that this place is unique in that you can do that. In that, if you do good work, people will hear about it. Whereas in England, I feel like, or anywhere in the UK, I feel like it can get lost. And it works both ways. Like I always say this, you could be a shitty plumber in the UK and get away with it forever.
Yeah.
Even if everyone told everyone, the word isn't going to get around. Whereas you do one shitty job as a plumber in Chester or Rosay or Charlottetown, everyone's going to hear, you're never going to get another job. And it's similarly in entertainment or whatever it is. You do something well and people like it, they will tell a lot of people and the word will spread quickly.
Also as well, if you have come here from away, people, if it, just can I have a coffee? I'd like to, I'm new to the city. I'd just like to learn about what you do or what, you know, what's going on in the city, what's this industry like? People were so open to just sitting down and talking,
right?
And giving their time up, and people are like, "Hey, let's don't get a coffee, let's get a beer in a pub."
Yeah.
So I was like, "This is my kind of place."
Yeah, and of course, in the UK, if you were like, "Hi, I'm new in town. Do you want to go and get a coffee?" People would think you were mental.
Who is this strange person?
Who is this strange person? But I know one thing we've talked about before, which I think listeners might find interesting. That when the one weird thing here, though, is that as you said before, when people say let's go for a beer, they do mean a beer.
I know.
And in England, they mean 20 beers.
Well, and like, before I came, my one of my best friends said, let's just go and have an Indian meal. Let's just have a pint. Well, a pint. And this was a Thursday night. And he had work at 8 a.m. the next morning. I think we had a taxi after like 8 pints.
Right.
And that was just a Thursday.
That's a fairly quiet Thursday. Exactly. That's quite civilized. No shots. You didn't get into double figures. 8 pints is normal, and here it's very rare that people drink 8 pints.
I know, and
you guys are hanging around the wrong people.
That's true.
I have a drinking problem.
Right, good, good, good. Okay, good. This is good news. And you are right. I mean, right now, last night, Monday night was absolutely buzzing around here, and you would have thought it was a Friday.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about this office is like if I work late, I'll come down and then all the fairy lights are on the street. There's like live music in the street. There's just the atmosphere, even during like, since they've relaxed everything here. And even though everything is locking down everywhere else, there's still this just, I think people are just reveling in the fact that there's this sense of normality and that they can have a meal and a drink and watch some live music with other people around them is a real privilege at the moment, I think.
Yeah. So. And John, I mean, one of the things that this city offers in so many ways is, of course, it may not have as much arts and culture and shows as somewhere like Toronto, but there's far more than any one person could do. I mean, is that something that, you know, what do you think about?
I do think that there's a thriving foodie culture. There's a buy local, there's microbrews, craft brews. There's a real strong community built around that food and culture space that there's tons to choose from. But you're right. It was funny. I was talking to a friend that's from Toronto who came back here and said the same thing. There's not enough choice here. And I had just come back from New York and I said, New Yorkers say the same thing about Toronto.
Right.
There's not a whole lot. So you can always sort of roll those criticisms down market downhill.
Yeah.
I'm always a fan of saying, if you can't find what you're looking for where you're living, go somewhere else and find it.
Right.
It's available. It's a short enough distance to get there. Mm. Now, mind you, we're not flying as much as we used to, but when you talk about a shopping experience, pop down to Boston, hour and 45 minutes away, and you're in a nice shopping
district.
Exactly. Right?
When you need it, go there. And I mean, the thing I never understood was people would say to me, even in St. John, they'd be like, but there's nothing to do here. I'm like, there's so much to do, and B, the number of, like, granted, in London, there may be all this extra choice, but I wouldn't make it to most of the things I wanted to go to. Now, here in St. John or here in Halifax, I still don't make it to most of the things I want to go to. So really, why be in a place where there's just more stuff that I'm missing when I'm already missing most of the stuff that I want to go to here anyway?
Also, most of the people I like, friends who'd moved to London, there was so much to do around them, but the cost of living meant they couldn't afford to do most of it.
Exactly. That's the thing is, I did not have a disposable income in London to necessarily go and see Michael Bublé at Wembley. But yet now, if Bublé might not come to St. John, but I can afford to jump on a flight and 1 hour to Montreal and go and see him. And that's the difference.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny. Here, you can get the things that you think you want and then you realize you don't want them. I bought a boat. Biggest mistake I've ever made. What I realize is like a truck. You want to know somebody who has a boat or a truck so you can use it every once in a while, but you don't want to own it, right?
It's true. I always say that the thing with the boat thing is that only an idiot would own a boat because when you turn up to go on someone's boat and you turn up with your case of beer and you get on, that idiot has been standing there for 3 hours pumping hundreds of dollars worth of gas in. And then when you get off the boat to go home, that person is going to be stuck there forever. And as you say, friends with boats is key. Yeah.
I think I'd end up sinking a boat.
You don't get invites, do you?
No.
And finally, John, what would you say is the biggest misnomer about the Maritimes?
It's funny because we all talk about that no job notion. Right. In Canada, when you think about Atlantic Canada, outside of Atlantic Canada, there's that notion that it's not a have-not province. There is that term frequently. But you've got a vibrancy and a youth space here. There used to be conversations about more deaths than births. 5 years ago, that shifted around where people are saying, I actually want to live in a place like Halifax. So that old notion of saying Halifax is an old stodgy town or a declining space or all of that kind of stuff, it's really shifted around. And the growth that I see in Halifax, specifically Nova Scotia, Maritimes, Atlantic Canada, has been, it's exciting to see.
It's true. So how many years here now? Three?
Two and a half.
I mean, that must have gone fast, but also it feels like you've been around forever. I mean that.
You're already born.
And I mean that in the best possible way. Yeah. And I also, I mean, in that you've become so ensconced within the Halifax scene, but also just your life here. Why do you think that happened so quickly? How do you think all of that happened so fast?
I think as a family, we were hungry for it. We were hungry just to come here, and we've got this huge list of beaches, places, hikes that we want to do, and we're just working through it slowly.
Right.
It is just a thirst for wanting to make it work here that really made it work. I think if I'd sat around waiting for things to come to me, then maybe it would have been a different conversation. Maybe I'd be back in Wales making Welsh TV shows or something again, you know. But I think for me, there was no such thing as a scenario where this didn't work for us.
Right.
We'd thrown everything into moving here. We'd even brought the dog over, you know. We'd got rid of any kind of financial or any kind of anchor aside from family back in the UK. So we were kind of all in. So there was no way we weren't going to make this work for ourselves, I guess. So
it had to work.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's key. You came over thinking this is going to work. It's going to be a success. You never thought about failure or the backup plan.
Yeah.
I think if I did fail, I wouldn't even recognize it. I'd be like, well, this is just a minor hiccup.
Right? What's next, right? Which is what your mentality is saying. Yeah. What's next? What's next? And you're lucky to be able to say, I can force myself into my space. You can find your fit, right? Which is what you've done.
Annoyingly, just keep knocking the door.
Exactly. Keep knocking. Well, this has been beautiful and very meta that the listeners of Mullinger Meets Canadians get to meet the people that created Mullinger Meets Canadians. Again, before I met you guys, I would not have done a podcast if I hadn't met you. So here we are. And now everyone knows you even better. Happy days.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It's been finally nice to meet you in person.
Yes, I know. It feels quite surreal, but beautiful.
Yeah.
I keep thinking, is this what Zoom looks like now? But no.
I think it's hilarious because typically this is Zoom in casual chairs, and here we are in a living room kind of setup.
Yeah.
But still together.
It's still together, exactly. It's wonderful. Well, keep smashing everything you do, guys, and we will no doubt do this again.
Definitely, awesome. Yeah. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Mullinger Meets Canadians. If you like greatness, creativity, being inspired, laughing, or just love Canada as much as I do, then this is the podcast for you. So please do subscribe and review the show now. Further details can be found on the Edit website,
maritimeedit.com. See you all next time.
Podstarter.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.